Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is brought to you by High Echelon. High Echelon PC is a nationwide CPA firm based in Atlanta focused on a great client experience. High Echelon provides top quality work with total transparency so clients always know exactly what they're getting. They believe accounting doesn't need to be complicated and that clients should get the experience they deserve, which includes top-notch accounting, tax, and payroll services, timely communication, complete data flow, and the best automation security. Book a call or drop them a line on their website, highecheloncpa.com. The Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is also brought to you by Blue Pineapple Travel. Blue Pineapple Travel is an agency of experienced travel advisors who help you design the perfect trip. Blue Pineapple Travel advisors are all well-traveled and knowledgeable, and they will be your advocates from start to finish. They love to help people plan their travel, whether it's for a race, a family trip, a weekend getaway, or the trip of a lifetime. Their goal is to match you with the trip that you want. Relaxation or adventure, traveling solo or with a group, inside the U.S. or abroad, Blue Pineapple Travel can plan exactly the trip that you want. Find them online at BluePineappleTravel.com and see some of the great places that folks who have worked with Blue Pineapple Travel go on their Instagram, at Blue Pineapple Travel. MPE Coaching is the coaching arm of the podcast. If you like what you hear here and you need help preparing for a big goal, reach out to us at PleasantPodcast@gmail.com or MPEcoach@gmail.com. Trail races, marathons, triathlons, multi-day relays, we have helped people get ready for all of these things. Our approach is rooted in proven exercise physiology, but we also bring our own experience as coaches and athletes to bear. We specialize in helping adults with busy schedules find ways to build fitness and accomplish their goals. Whether you're looking to complete your first multi-sport race, qualify for Boston or Kona, set a new marathon PR, or simply become a healthier, happier athlete, we can help. Click on the coaching link on the podcast website, www.mostpleasantexhaustion.com. The Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is also brought to you by Elemental Altitude Training Center. Elemental Altitude is Atlanta's only altitude training facility. At Elemental Altitude state-of-the-art indoor training center, they are capable of simulating elevation of up to 24,000 feet. Training in the thinner air and lack of oxygen prompts an increase in red blood cells, meaning that more oxygen can be delivered to your working muscles on race day. Athletes undertaking all sorts of goals, from rugged mountain climbs to flat sea level marathons to Ironman triathlons, train in the hypoxic environment created at Elemental Altitude. I trained there several times ahead of my successful race at the London Marathon in 2022. And Michelle trained there extensively for the Silver Rush 50 in 2023, her first ever 50-mile race that spent a lot of time over 10,000 feet. In addition, Elemental Altitude hosts a variety of physiological testing, such as sweat testing, blood lactate testing, VO2 max testing, and a variety of metabolic testing, which can tell you your resting metabolic rate and the types and amounts of fuels you are burning at different training and racing intensities. Drop them a line at info@elementalaltitude.com if you have questions or to set up an appointment. Their website is elementalaltitude.com. And finally, our new sponsor for 2024 is Bright Hair. Bright Hair is a creative design studio offering branding, graphic design, marketing, and website design and support. They designed our Most Pleasant Exhaustion logo, and they are helping to build our website right now. The folks at Bright Hair are patient and thorough, and they listen to your feedback. Their expertise has been critical to our getting our branded merchandise shop off the ground in early 2024. Be sure to reach out to them with any graphic design or marketing needs that you have. You can find them at brighthair.com. That's bright, B-R-I-G-H-T, hair, H-A-R-E.com, or on Instagram at bright.hair. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast possible. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast, brought to you by MPE Coaching, Bright Hair, Blue Pineapple Travel, Elemental Altitude Training Center, and High Echelon PC. My name is George Darden. I'm an endurance athlete and coach in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a father of twin boys and I'm a college professor.
My name is Michelle Frank. I'm also an endurance athlete in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a mom to three girls and a CPA.
And I am Eric Hall. I am a ultra runner, cyclist, sometimes uninjured athlete in Raleigh, North Carolina, also occasionally a coach, the father to three baby adults, seeing glimmers of one of them moving beyond that stage, and the husband to an amazing and beautiful wife, Melissa.
Very good. That was a long introduction there, Eric. I appreciate all the detail, man. I am glad to be with both of you here today. And we got several things we're going to be talking about over the course of the next little while here. Some races, some shout outs, a little bit of a check-in, all sorts of various things. I want to say first, for as much as we talk about shoes on this podcast, did y'all see that there is a new world record for the fastest barefoot half marathon to be run on ice?
I just saw that. Mm-hmm. Is that necessary?
That is the classic Michelle response. A guy named Joseph Salek. Joseph Salek from Czech Republic ran 1:50.42 on ice and snow wearing only a pair of shorts. So he was also wearing no shirt, but I mean, that wouldn't necessarily get you a world record. So only a pair of shorts, no shoes, no socks, barefoot on ice. He's known for doing things like this, like walking barefoot over hot coals and glass shards. And he actually set a world record in the past for holding a plank for 9 hours and 38 minutes. 9 hours and 38 minutes to hold a plank. That's an impressive record.
I don't think you can do that.
So, well, he did. I can't. Yeah. So, that's the sort of person that runs 1:50.42 for a half marathon on ice barefooted. Speaking of barefooted and feet and all that sort of thing, how's your foot/ankle doing, Eric?
It's doing much better. I'm actually doing my ankle exercises under my desk right now.
All right.
That week of intensive work to get the ankle back in shape came to fruition. Did my first run Monday. Mm-hmm. And then I took Tuesday, Wednesday off of running. I rode one of those days, and then I went out and actually I did a workout yesterday, my first running workout in a while, and it feels good. I mean, it's a little stiff, but you'd expect that, but it's not unstable. It's and it doesn't hurt. I wouldn't say that. It doesn't hurt. It's not swollen. Fits in my shoes. So
good.
Yeah, it's going really well.
I feel obliged, since we just talked about somebody running and setting a world record with no shoes on, to actually ask you what shoes you wore for your workout yesterday, your first running workout in a while.
You know what shoes you wore.
I do.
Maybe because we have at least two message groups that have been talking about this. So I wore the first, and I can't believe I'm actually saying this, the first pair of collab shoes I've ever owned, first collab gear I've ever owned. It's the REI Saucony Endorphin Speed 4 collab shoe. Mm-hmm. And you obviously saw my Strava post yesterday. I put a little blurb in there about them. I feel like they fixed everything, every issue I had with the version 1 through 3. Mm-hmm. And this shoe, at least initial impressions, because I've only run in it once, I really like it. Mm-hmm. I really, really like the shoe. And someone actually quoted me in another in one of our chat groups saying that she chose to buy this shoe because they fixed all of the issues with the version 1 through 3.
Was that David Witherington? Because I wanted to make sure we gave a shout out to David Witherington referring to you as a social media influencer on Strava.
He's talking about me, but on that note, he successfully influenced both David and me. So he's definitely an influencer.
For sure. By using social media, in this case, Strava. Very good. Eric, start building your brand, man. You're the next David Goggins.
This is the beginning, and pain is all in your head. Pain is all in your head. You know, it's not real. You can push through. As long as you wear a orange mud hydration vest and you wear...
I believe it's called a quiver.
A quiver, hydration quiver. The double barrel only. And then if you wear the Saucony REI collab
Endorphin
Speed Version 4. I think that actually is the longest name of a pair of shoes.
I was going to say, you went for it. You gave us the full Monty there. Last thing you need is some sort of supplement that is like your go-to supplement. And you're all the way there, Eric. You know, start telling people to use glutamine or athletic greens or whatever some of those things that all the bros like. So by all
means. I've been talking about Tailwind for over a year now. And we just spent over almost $150 on Element.
So, really? See, now Mortal Hydration, I texted y'all, is so much better than Element. It has the same sodium content, but yet it actually tastes better.
Yeah.
They sell it for far cheaper. If you go on certain websites.
Yeah, but unfortunately, when you pick hydration companies to go with, they usually don't turn out the best.
Fair point. So we'll see whether Mortal Hydration is able to last. That's what I'm using right now, and that is the one thing I've already added to the gear guide, the gift guide that we do in December or November at the end of 2024. So
Speaking of that, and I don't want to forget that we do need to eventually let Michelle talk, but on that gear guide, will you put the polar watch that you've been wearing on the gear guide too?
So maybe. Why? I mean, I've had this watch for more than 2 years now, you know.
I do, but I also know that you were making assertions that if certain transactions were to take place, you might actually offer Michelle some money for her current Garmin watch.
So for the Garmin that she's been wearing. Yeah, no. So I've been on a little bit of a watch odyssey over the course of the past several years. I had a Garmin, and then Michelle let me borrow her Coros for a while. And we all know about that. We had a whole podcast about Coros and the difficulties that they had faced. And then I bought a Polar, which is what I'm currently wearing now. And I wore that for a while. And then I was gifted a Wahoo watch by a friend of the podcast, Brian. So I wore that for a little while and tried that. I went back to wearing the Polar because the Polar will actually take your heart rate variability while you're sleeping at night. And that's something that I've been measuring. That's a metric I've been following over the course of about the past 6 months or so. And it's been interesting to follow and see the various things that actually can influence that and how it aligns with how I'm qualitatively feeling and things like that. I've been wearing the Polar watch. The one thing that the watch that I have doesn't have that I sometimes wish that it did is music capability. And Michelle was thinking about replacing her watch that has music capability on it. And so I figured... Maybe I could offer Michelle a bargain basement price to sell me her old watch if she gets a new one.
I've actually used that on my watch a couple of times. Michelle, how many times have you used that functionality on your watch? Because I know you run with AirPods. So I'm just wondering. Yeah.
If only
you could see Michelle's face right now.
Michelle's trying to come up with an intelligent way to explain that she's never used it.
If you listen to the podcast, you realize that Michelle is about as technologically challenged as anybody, especially when it comes to her watch.
Only when it comes to Garmin, really, or Coros, I've actually for kind of self-salvation purposes, not dive too deep into that because then I get too obsessed with the numbers. It's not that it's like on the top of my head that before I was going to run Houston, Training Peak said my fitness was 71. And then a week ago it was like 63 climbing to 67. And then before I ran Shamrock on Sunday, it was down to 54. I mean, I don't too much time on that.
Yeah. No, I get it. I mean,
what does this have to do with not using the music function of your watch? Are we going to loop back to that? That's how this got started.
Well, these are the things that you think I'm technologically challenged on. And I'm telling you that I've sort of made it a point over time to understand less of it than I understand in order to just not become so obsessed with the numbers, right?
I get that. And you don't want to dive into learning how to use it because that would expose you to lots of different metrics that Strava or that your watch keeps that would then occupy your mind
Yeah,
and potentially be deleterious. I get
and
it.
Eric, for all of the Garmin Q&A that I've had over the past 2 years, I've never once been like, oh, I really want to download music. Can you help me do it? I've asked every other question. You know, I've never used the music on my Garmin Music Watch. I did specifically buy this because I didn't want the like 100 series, but at the time I didn't want to buy another Phoenix and I didn't need the 900 series. So this was really aesthetically just the watch of choice. And it was the Garmin 255 at the time. But as it goes, I can only really handle a watch for like 2 years and I've had this for 2.5. So the time, you know, the clock is just tick, 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 tick.
You're due.
I'm due.
it's funny. I, and Eric, you'll appreciate this, or at least where I ultimately go with this. I've had some times in my life where I had to get rid of my training log because I was getting too bogged down in the numbers, and that's me. And I'm not an accountant by training and by nature.
I think we've talked about this on the podcast.
Yeah, probably. I mean, the summer before my junior year in college, so we're talking about way back in the day in my running career, I actually threw out my training log because I felt I was getting so bogged down in the numbers. And I said, I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to do competition. I'm going to throw myself into the competition, throw myself into just simply working hard. And I ended up having the best year of running that I had in my early career there, that junior year of college, by focusing on the parts of the sport that I liked and not getting distracted by the numbers. If you kind of fast forward that, I think out to 2024, out to today, I think there are a lot of coaches who put a lot of emphasis on those numbers, put a lot of stake in what your TSS is on training peaks or what your current acute training load is or your chronic training load is. And I think that those are useful metrics, but I think it can be very easy as an athlete and a coach to get bogged down in them. And so Michelle, yeah, I'm still going to make fun of you about like not being able to use the functionality of your watch or giving, you know, 6 kudos over the course of a year to people on Strava. But I get where you're coming from in that you don't want to get too bogged down in the numbers. I mean, after all, like we were talking before we started talking about the podcast, like you tend to memorize numbers and count things that don't even necessarily need to be counted. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like all of that.
Yeah. Which makes you a good accountant. It means you're in the right line of work. You know, I have heard nothing but brilliant things about what a fantastic accountant you are and what an amazing company, High Echelon PC, your company is. And that doesn't surprise me at all, given how your mind is inclined towards numbers.
Yeah. So what's my watch worth to you?
So let's see. Well,
$50.
I'm gonna start with $5.
Go to hell.
Balls in your court. Make me a counteroffer.
Let's give him a third watch that he can rotate.
I mean,
like he rotates your shoes.
The last watch I got from you, Michelle, was free. So $5. I mean, I feel like that's progress.
First of all, I gave you 2 Coros watches, and I got both of those free from them.
No, oh, okay.
Didn't both of those break, and you eventually gave them to me?
Yes, they
yes,
did.
Yes, you have all of them, yeah. I think.
Yeah. So that's okay. Right. I didn't remember that you had gotten those watches free yourself.
So I did like a bunch of beta testing for them. Mm-hmm. Right. I did buy one of them, but then the next two were given because they came out with like the Apex and then the Apex 2. So
that's right.
I mean, I will say like the Coros is a
software update and it crashed your watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they are still having those problems, which sometimes I'll just stalk that Facebook group. And it's just shocking that like 5 years later, people either haven't figured out, do not update if your watch works
ever.
Fine. ever. But no, I mean, the company is still, I don't know. I don't know how they're selling watches. They just picked up Ingebrigtsen. Did you guys
see that?
They
picked
up
Jacob Ingebrigtsen as a sponsored athlete.
Yeah. So anyway, but.
Not bad. I mentioned Brian had bought me a watch last year, and so I do want to give a shout out to Brian real quick while we're giving shout outs here. Give a shout out to Lee, a friend of the podcast, Lee Ragsdale, friend of the podcast, Brian Hetherington, friend of the podcast, Aaron Henderlight. All of them are doing the Croatan Buck tomorrow. the gravel race that Lee and Aaron came on and talked about on the podcast last year. Some pretty bad weather forecasted in North Carolina over the course of the weekend. And so some of the shout outs were given here for people that are in North Carolina whose races may well be affected, but we'll have to see whether that course has changed, not only for them that are doing the 108-mile route, but also for the people that are doing the Buck 50, which is roughly 150 miles as well.
We don't know any of them, so we don't care though.
Yeah. Shout out to Doug Olson, an athlete that I've been coaching over the course of the past little while here. Doug tomorrow is running the Mount Mitchell Heartbreaker, which is a 50-plus mile race with three massive climbs in western North Carolina, the middle of which is Mount Mitchell, the highest point in the eastern United States. That's the middle climb. That's the second of three climbs. And so excited for him. He has done a lot of really good work over the course of the past few months to prepare for this race. Super proud of him. He has gone and previewed the course, both the middle climb and the first climb, to get a better sense of what it is he's going to be facing. And he will be rocking a Most Pleasant Exhaustion trucker hat. So we will look forward to hearing about how he goes. So I think I'm going to try and talk him into coming onto the podcast sometime over the course of the next month, talk a little bit about the experience that he had there. Hopefully they won't be changing the course on him, because they might if it's snowing on the top of Mount Mitchell tomorrow, but we'll see.
Do you know what shoes he's going to wear for that?
He's gone back and forth between a couple of different shoes. But so I can't remember exactly which ones he's going to use. And then he may change shoes partway through as well. One of his drop bags, he's actually going to have another pair of shoes in.
He does a lot of running in ultras. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doug, I sent my first ever Strava PM and it's to you. So please, please answer it. Cheers.
Shout out to Doug, and we are super excited to see how he does. Like I said, I mean, Doug is putting in a lot of work. I'm proud of that guy already, and I know he's going to do well, and so I'm really, really excited to hear how he does. We already gave our shout out to David Witherington, who of course referred to Eric as a social media influencer on Strava, and so I just wanted to bring it up a second time. Eric, you have a shout out to give.
I do have a shout out to give to my daughter Grace and her friend Jocelyn and the rest of the Duke Running Club that will be running a relay, whereas Jocelyn and Grace will be running the Blackbeard's Revenge 100 this weekend. All right. Out on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. So whereas Doug is over in the mountains on the far western edge of North Carolina, Grace and Jocelyn will be out on the Outer Banks on the eastern edge of North Carolina. I think they're predicting 2 inches of rain, 30 mile per hour average sustained. Ugh. And the race director said last night he had one of those Zoom calls prior to the event, and he actually said last night that the prediction is about halfway through the, I guess, I don't remember how many hours you get to finish, but the wind is actually going to change direction 180 degrees and be in their faces again.
Oh, that's convenient.
They've taken
so if you're lucky, you get to run the entire race with a headwind.
Exactly. They've taken most of the bridge sections out. There may be one bridge right before the turnaround. And I asked Melissa, because Melissa and our friend Carrington are gonna crew them. Melissa said, I said, well, why would they put a bridge in? And her exact quote was, I think just because he's mean. So they've cut the course down to an out and back, but they do have to cross one bridge, do a little loop, and then go back.
Gotcha.
So I'm hoping that it goes well. I mean, this is, you know, Grace has done, you know, mountain hundreds. She's done asphalt hundreds, and now she's going to try to do an asphalt 100 in the rain with a lot of wind. So this should be interesting.
All right. Is she, I mean, there's not really a good way for me to ask this question. Is she prepared? I mean, is she ready to go?
You know, so I think she and I, because we've been on the podcast twice talking about hundreds she's done, her process is she hates tapering. And there's always some sort of like injury that comes up during tapering. And then there's a lot of nerves that bubble up during tapering and coming to. And so, but then she's been successful at those hundreds after that. So this is actually playing out exactly how the other ones played out. So in that sense, I think she's in a good place. I think this is, and hundreds in general, I think are more about the mental. If you piled in the miles, which she has, it's more about the mental aspect. And I would say that mentally, she's got a really good attitude about this. And Jocelyn's an awesome person to run with. They're both very encouraging. They've trained a lot together. So I think she's ready for it. I think she's going to do just fine.
Are they going to run together during the race itself?
That's the plan.
Okay.
Now I will say that last year, the plan was that Melissa and Carrington would run together, and that plan broke down. And I think the first 30 miles or so. Yeah. So it's because we all know it's a tough thing to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've run with Grace through 100K once and 50 miles once and 100 miles once. And that's difficult to run at another person's pace and kind of be linked to him. So I hope they do stay together, because I think especially in this wind environment, they can really help one another out. I watched this guy last year. Basically, they were three runners together, and he organized them into a pace line. And so he would be running, and the next person would be right at like 2 feet behind him, and the next person was right 2 feet behind them, or behind that person. And they ran the whole second 50 miles like that. And I think that's why they finished, because, you know, they organized that. So that could be a really powerful thing. But I think also just like having that partner out there to talk to commiserate with, I think that'll be helpful.
Doug has a couple of buddies that he entered this race with. And there was a conversation that he and I had on Wednesday afternoon. I was like, all right, are you planning to run with them? Or what's the plan? Have you talked about that with them? And he had, and the plan effectively is to stay together unless it begins to appear that could compromise one of their finishes. Like, they all want to finish. And if one of them is going to potentially not finish, they're not all going to DNF together. that's a good plan. And then Michelle, you have a shout out too, right?
Yeah. So Eric Henderson, who gets referenced a lot here on the podcast in my life, is running his first ultra. He picked the National Geographic Adventure number one toughest race in America.
On purpose?
Yeah, Badwater Cape Fear, 50 miles on sand. He's also heading to the coast of North Carolina. He will be weathering the same weather storm, whatever you want to call it, incoming that Grace and her friends are going to have to deal with. So I think there was a lot of talk, really, just is the race going to be canceled? But the race director seems to have been pretty thorough and, you know, navigating stuff with the island and Department of, you know, whoever controls all of this public land, and felt like safety wasn't an issue, even though I think it sounds like they're going to drown in rain. Not, I wouldn't say that to him, but literally, like, we looked up the amount of rain that canceled Peyton's, and it was 0.6 inches. And this is expected to be almost 2 inches. So just because I couldn't really understand, is 1.8 inches of rain a lot? And Eric went in and he's like, well, let me just tell you what happened in Mount Pleasant, you know, the weekend of Peyton's. He's like, it was like 0.6 something. It wasn't even 0.7. So this is three times that amount. But I don't know if, you know, it's on a beach. So it's obviously going to drain much better than just being in a standstill park, which on its own has a bunch of, like,
one would think
many lakes anyway. But so, yeah, we're,
it's on a beach. Is it out and back on a beach? Is it loops on a beach? Like what's the setup?
I mean, some of it is like on sand. It's not all on sand. Some of it goes on concrete, some of it goes on asphalt. So, I don't know. It doesn't sound like it would be shortened or anything. Like, I think either it's happening or it's not, but
a race that is billed as the toughest race in America doesn't seem like the sort of thing that's going to be shortened or canceled because it's a little bit of windy and rain.
Yeah. Right? I also feel like, you're dealing with like the Badwater people. So, you know, it's probably not going to be, canceled very easily, if that makes sense.
No, that's exactly what I mean. Yeah.
So there's three aid stations. They've got like drop bags that they're going to keep warm for them. It is like a loop. So the part that's not on sand isn't on sand, but I think there's cutoffs also that if you don't make it, you're going to deal with high tide. So I think there's a potential for him to be running through a lot of ocean water that probably would be easier to not run through. So anyways, but
yes, I would imagine it would be easier to run not in the ocean.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I can't imagine why anybody would want to go run 50 miles, but good luck.
I mean, in light of all this description here, I think it's also worth mentioning, you said this is his first ever race, period, right?
I mean, I did tell you guys that. He has done some 5Ks, but he's been training for this for 7 months. When I was working with Janice ahead of Leadville, I asked her for like a few recommendations for him. And he did get a coach, kind of a famous ultra guy, Robert Younger. And he said to him, you know, get yourself up to 40 miles a week by October. And if you can do that, get back in touch with me. Mm-hmm. And Eric really did that on his own for like the whole summer, just working his way up to 40 miles a week, and then reached out. And this guy just gives him a training plan every single week and like the VDOT app, which again, I know not enough about, but enough about to know that that's like a lot of way that people coach. And he has like literally followed the plan to a T. I mean, there was maybe, you know, like maybe one day it was 15 miles and he did 13. And I think not that he beat himself up over that, but it's like, dude, you're fine. Like your 13 miles is your 15 miles. It's raining. It's windy. You know, so yeah, he's had some crazy, crazy mileage weeks, but he also, like Grace and maybe like a lot of us, did not really enjoy the taper this past week. I think partly like, why do I still have to run 12 miles last weekend? But then also, you know, just going out for like 3 miles gets annoying when you're used to every single run is 5, 6, 7, 8 miles. So, but yeah.
And even when you know that you're not losing fitness, that belief that somehow you're losing everything that you've worked for and you're blowing it here at the finish line, like that's tough to overcome, man. That's tough to let go. All the qualitative and scientific evidence points to you're not losing fitness during the taper, but that's hard. I had an athlete several years ago who always told me that he didn't like to taper because it messed with his sleep. And I think that's
so true.
That's one of, I think, the best excuses to not taper I've ever heard. Like that's probably the only legitimate one I've ever heard.
Maybe taper less.
So, yeah. I mean, he ultimately kind of figured out a way to make it work for him. The biggest mistake I always talk about with tapering that people make is that because they're not spending 15 hours training or 10 hours training or whatever it is, instead they're spending 3 hours training, they have all this extra time. And so they like take on these projects around their house, or they decide to binge watch some show that they haven't been able to binge watch or something. And so they end up doing all this extra stuff and getting off their schedule and completely kind of upending their lives over the course of that week. And it's like, well, that kind of misses the purpose too. So you got to kind of stay on the same general routine.
So just four things. I was going to do just three things, but four things. George, on the outset, you said many of these are in North Carolina. All of our callouts are in the great state of North Carolina, which you are wearing a shirt that
for Tobacco Road Relay, which has an outline of North Carolina on it.
North Carolina on it. So I do, and I have
the race I'm doing tomorrow is in North Georgia, so I'm not going to North Carolina. But
well,
it's close.
We didn't actually give you a call out, so
okay, you're right.
That was number one. Number two, lots of discussion with Grace about this tapering topic. And one thing that she did, and kind of ties together two things, is she said, like, she was actually having a tough week school-wise, but she said, I'm really trying to focus on getting my sleep. And so she actually cut a run out just so that she could maximize her sleep. And I thought that was that, you know, that if I had to make that trade-off, that's the trade-off I would make also.
So mature decision on her part.
Very mature decision on her part. Number three, lots and lots of discussion in our house about race cancellations. This would have been the third race cancellation for my family just this year. Melissa's race in Charlotte was rescheduled and canceled. Peyton's canceled. This would have been the third. And, you know, the conversation we were having is the difficulty of being a race director and trying to make that decision. I don't care who your racers are. But they have to deal with all the community aspects of it, right? Like not just like the impact on the community, but also if you start changing things like where are your aid stations going to be, you know, are they still willing to support? And if it's going to rain the whole time and you're going to have 30 mile per hour winds, how do you set up an aid station?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you get to the safety considerations. My biggest concern from, you know, still for this race is they're going to be running on the side of the road at times with cars whizzing by using their windshield wipers at night.
Mm.
And that just doesn't seem all that safe to me.
Right.
But the ultra community, much like Michelle was saying, you know, the Badwater community is real big on it's hard, so we're going to keep doing it. And I, you know, they're instituting mm-hmm. things to try to make it safe, and I appreciate that. But I think that's, you know, that's another reason why I want Grace and Jocelyn to stay together is I feel like you're more visible.
Yeah.
With
totally.
People.
Yeah.
So side point on that point. Cool. I know you got one more. Yeah. Side point on that point. I do think that ultra running is becoming more professionalized in terms of protecting runner safety and not putting them at risk for the sake of putting them at risk, because it makes the race more epic.
Like now that being said,
there is a thread inside the ultra community that is led by the Barkley Marathons. That believes that the less safe you make the race and the less you care for the runners and the less you permit it and all that sort of thing, the better it is and the more awesome that it is. I don't know the particular race that Grace is running, but I hope that the race that she's running is not of that ilk. But I generally try to avoid races like that.
I'm going to agree with all but one piece of what you said. I don't think the intent is to make the race less safe for the runners. It's typically to make it more difficult. And I know that may be like, you may be threading a needle there, but making someone trudge through a briar patch is not necessarily unsafe, but it is very difficult. But you could, you know, you start getting to that point of, is this really safe? So,
well, to me, the decisions about making it more difficult that make it more unsafe is making, like, changing the course on the fly, or setting up a situation where, well, like you said, that somebody could be running along the road in the middle of the night and they haven't done anything to alert the motorist that there's actually a race going on, like stuff like that. It's entirely possible to have a long race in which that goes over roads in the night and everything else like that, that is safe. The Blue Ridge Relay is one of them. It's entirely possible. But not a lot of racers do that, because they're like, oh, if we're putting up signs and directing people and that sort of thing, we're just coddling them. That's making it easier. It's making it safer. And so I agree with you that the intent is not necessarily to make it less safe. The intent is to make it more difficult and more epic. But I think an offshoot of that is that it becomes oftentimes less safe.
Yes.
But okay. Anyway, what's your number fourth point,
man? Michelle, you said they're going to keep their drop bags warm. Like, why are you keeping drop bags warm? You
said dry. The race had a problem a few years ago where at the, I think the conservatory, everybody's drop bags were just laid out on a tarp on the ground and it rained and everybody's stuff got soaking wet. So there was a big, I think, emphasis this year to let the runners know that their drop bags would be taken from one dry spot, like, to another, because he packed just kind of maybe like an old just backpack. And I thought, why don't we put this in a garbage bag, like, or put everything in it in Ziploc. But I think he's pretty confident that when he gets to that, because that's like the halfway point, and he's going to have a change of everything in there, even shoes, that it'll still be dry. So
Michelle,
if I said
is he curing
warm,
himself?
I meant dry. Yeah.
Michelle's not throwing them.
Is their crew allowed this race?
I actually don't know. It was the dates didn't work with just a bunch of other stuff going on, and he's signed up for this months ago. So, like, it was always known that if he was going to have his parents come and his, you know, maybe a few other people, but I think in the end he really decided he just kind of wanted to go on his own. Not that he would have told me I couldn't go, but once it, like, I couldn't go, essentially. He just kind of decided to go for it. So I will say that, like, you know, this backup race, it doesn't seem like he's going to need it, but it's in Spartanburg, and I was trying to kind of figure out like if I could leave at 6:30 on Sunday, if it's 50 miles, if he needed somebody for like the last few hours. But I think it's just going to, it's going to work out that this race runs and hopefully he gets to run it. So, all right. Yeah.
Very cool. Very good. Yeah. All right. We want to mention just a couple more quick things here, cause I know we're under a time crunch, but Michelle, I did want to give you the opportunity to talk about your marathon if you want to talk about it. We mentioned it the last time we recorded was like the day or two before you're going to be running the Shamrock Marathon in Virginia Beach.
It's okay. It's not, I think people were worried when they saw like how I fell apart at about halfway that it was going to be another, you know, one of these like sob stories and I would just fall into this like pit of despair. I think it was a bit of a gamble to go. Like, I think I was ready to go for Houston in January. And it took a while to recover from COVID. And then I think, you know, the rebuild or so to speak was pretty good. I felt like I was hitting stuff, but I did get hit with the stomach bug 10 days before the race and took a bit of Zofran just to get back to eating normally until about Sunday. I will say like, I did try everything that I could put money or time into to be ready for Sunday. I tried like a big carb load just to, you know, refill the glycemic stores, just anything. And I thought that it would probably either go pretty well or it would be just the total disaster. So I wouldn't call it a total disaster. Like I'm glad I went. I do, I thought it was a great race. Like I would totally recommend people going. I just, you know, it's funny because when we talk about my technological deficiencies or whatever, in my mind, I felt like I was really just kind of running a bit effortless. And, but when I had Eric, when Eric looked at my heart rate on Strava, his feedback was, well, you started at like 160 and you were just going up the whole time until you like bonked at mile 13. So then I'm like, oh, well, maybe like, should I pay more attention to the numbers? Because maybe that was just totally obvious from the first mile that if my heart rate was already at like one, you know, the mid to high 150s that I was not going to make it 26 miles. But then I'm like, well, shouldn't I be able to just run a marathon at like mid to high 150s? So maybe I should learn a little bit more about the numbers and pay more attention to them. I don't know if it would have helped on Sunday, but I will say the aftermath, I feel like for me, the bad races always leave me hurting the worst. It's felt like a bit of like a little bit, I don't know, like embarrassing about how sore I was this week. I mean, it was a tough Monday, Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And I was wishing that we had like the handicap bars, you know, in the bathrooms at my house. Mm-hmm. But no, it was, you know, it is what it is. I'm not like, I think for me, I keep thinking about this, but I can't, the train through the winter and go for a marathon in January is just so perfect for my life. Mm-hmm. This is crazy. Like I didn't even tell my parents that I'm flying to go run a marathon on March 15th. Cause like in my world, that's corporate tax deadline. Mm-hmm. So I sent my dad a picture. I'm like, going to just go to Virginia Beach and run a marathon. And his response was a lot of like bad words. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like nobody, you know, nobody does anyway. And then just the fall is tough with kids coming off summer and the heat of the summer and going back to school. So mm-hmm. it's disappointing that Houston didn't happen. But I'm definitely like pretty motivated to figure out how I, you know, once figured out this marathon thing. I mean, I obviously have some other stuff on the calendar for later this year, but you know, I think whatever, it was a learning experience. Okay. It didn't work, but it wasn't all like right. not worth trying. So
yeah. Tell us about your shoes.
I wore the New Balance Fuel Cell Super Comp Elite 4s. So I picked those up when they released and I thought that they were awesome. I did as much running in them as I could. I should probably reach out to Dustin and ask him what he thinks. A client of mine that's a PT that I've talked about a lot on here. He was my PT before he was a high echelon client. So he's kind of a jack of all trades for me now, but my toe, I loved the shoes, but I almost immediately felt just jamming of my toe on my left foot. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many pictures of my foot I've sent you guys this week, but the aftermath of that has been extraordinarily painful. Mm-hmm. I would say I've lost like many toenails, but usually the toenail is just black. I haven't really had an issue where the whole toe bed is like black and blue bruised. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it was, they just weren't laced tight enough or the toe box is too wide, but I have, you know, I have like a pair of Puma Deviate Nitro Elite 2s. I've got these shoes. So I've got a $200 and $250 pair of carbon plated shoes. I don't know, like maybe I just don't need that shoe, but also I really want to run a marathon in the Deviate Nitro 3 that, you know, all of our Olympic marathoners wore that comes out this mm-hmm. summer. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I should keep them or I should just learn to lace my shoes or it's interesting. Camille Herron did a race recap on Free Trail. It came out yesterday, so I don't expect that, you know, many people have listened to it, but she said that a lot of what she learned working with Lululemon and the product manufacturer or innovation for their shoes is she's been wearing like the wrong shoe size and the wrong width basically her whole life. Huh. So it made me think like, oh, well maybe, you know, maybe there's a reason why my toe was jamming. So I would mm-hmm. big thumbs up for the shoe. I just think it was user error and nothing to do with the shoe.
Interesting.
So,
Well, and I'll add too, there's, you were talking about how room in the toe box and you didn't lace it well and that it was banging against the front and that could have been it, but there's as much evidence to suggest that the reason why toe boxes end up giving you black toenails is not because they're too big, but because they're too small. And so I don't think it's the same necessarily for everybody. But you'll end up crunching your toes and ultimately giving yourself black toenails if the toe box is the wrong size on either end of the spectrum, either too big or too small. Right. And so it might be that it was actually too narrow or too small.
And it comes down to the third aspect, I think, width and length. And then Michelle touched on this, your lacing. Mm-hmm. I think lots of people wear their shoes too tight. And I think lots of people wear their shoes too loose. And some of them it's because there's like this perception of what a shoe should look like when it's on your feet, right? Mm-hmm. And some of that also is driving people whether they get a wider shoe or a narrower shoe. And I think lacing your shoes appropriately is, it's almost an art.
Maybe to discuss on a later podcast.
It's an interesting topic. Just to be clear, the shoes had nothing to do with like my indication of how I could run on the day. It was just another kind of adding insult to injury or whatever that expression is to, mm-hmm. you know, have this banged up toe mm-hmm. and be so sore. But mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm going to do with the shoes. If somebody mm-hmm. wants to make me an offer, I might just part ties with them now, but I do like them. So I'm just thinking that maybe I need to learn how to wear them correctly, but we'll see.
How many times did you run on them before the race?
Probably half a dozen or so, right?
Yeah. So I ran that Atlanta, I ran the half marathon.
Okay.
And I did two workouts in them. And then I had like a 75 minute run the Sunday before. And I think I was so nervous that like, I didn't even know if I could run 75 minutes because of how sick I had been. So I put the shoes on and I just was like, well, I want to feel what these feel like at 9 minute pace, which actually ended up being worth it because, you know, I spent a lot of time over 9 minute pace in the marathon.
But during the Atlanta half and during that 75 minute run, no issues with your feet?
No, they were fine. So what did I, what did I do?
You use a different sock?
Yeah, I did.
I can't see Eric's face. I just know he's making one at you.
I wore a really thin sock at Shamrock. I wore like a thin wool sock because it was hot and I wanted to like prevent the too much sweating of my feet. I get it. I hear what you're saying. Okay.
Oh, no. I am not accusing you of anything.
I did wear a different sock though. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like when I try to troubleshoot cars, it's like, what's the one thing you changed?
All right, y'all, we got to wrap it up here. Alas, we are out of time. There's a few things we didn't get a chance to talk about, like Nico Young just being on the tear that he's on and setting a new collegiate record in the 10,000 meters at the 10. We didn't get to talk about that obscure race in Tennessee that some people are really fascinated by. That's going on right now. We will talk about both of those and more when we come back in here next time. Does that sound like a plan, Michelle?
Sounds good. Thank you everybody for coming to our banter episode today.
And the Shamrock Race Report as brought to us by Michelle. Our shout
George,
out
that
episode.
Took like 6 minutes of the last 60.
Well, I think the most important thing we talked about is how I've become a social media influencer.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. There's the, I was sitting here thinking as we were saying that, like, what should be the title of the episode? There it is.
Yep.
Eric, the social media influencer.
There we go.
Absolutely.
That's perfect.
Thanks everybody.
Bye guys.
Thanks again for listening to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast. Don't forget to check out our new website that we're building in early 2024, mostpleasantexhaustion.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pleasantpodcast or on Instagram at mostpleasantexhaustion. We're available on SoundCloud, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tell your friends and don't forget to give us a rating. We also offer coaching services through MPE Coaching. You can reach out to us at pleasantpodcast@gmail.com, at mpecoach@gmail.com, or just click on the coaching link on the podcast website. Again, that's www.mostpleasantexhaustion.com. Thanks again to our sponsor, Blue Pineapple Travel. You can find them at bluepineappletravel.com, at facebook.com/bluepineappletravel, or on Instagram at bluepineappletravel. Check out High Echelon PC at highecheloncpa.com. Big thanks to our sponsor, Elemental Altitude. You can find them at elementalaltitude.com, on Instagram at elementalaltitude, or on Facebook at facebook.com/elementalaltitude. And finally, thanks to our newest sponsor, Bright Hair. You can find them at brighthair.com or on Instagram at bright.hair. On behalf of Michelle Frank and Eric Hall, thanks for listening to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast.